Good afternoon, everybody. It's Kevin Stevenson. You've joined me on I Don't Care with me, Kevin Stevenson. Thanks for doing so. I always know that you have choices for your streaming and podcasting pleasure, and really appreciate the fact that you've joined me. You know, it's amazing, folks. I've been doing this for 6 years now. 6 years this month, over 170 podcasts. And you guys still tune in. So thanks again for that. So today's guest is Burl Stamp. Burl has Stamp and Chase. He's a former recovering hospital executive. Burl, welcome to I Don't Care.
Thank you, Kevin. It's a pleasure to be with you. Pleasure to be with your audience. I so appreciate the opportunity to be with you. This is an honor.
Well, thanks a lot, Burl. The honor is mine. Tell my audience a little bit about you and about your company and what you guys do.
Well, that's funny you use the phrase recovering, because I often to folks describe myself as a recovering hospital CEO. So I spent the front half of my career in major health systems, spent a long time at BJC in my hometown of St. Louis, and then as the CEO of the Children's Hospital in Phoenix. But 22 years ago, I founded Stamp and Chase. And Stamp and Chase is a firm that has always been focused on the experience that individuals have in healthcare organizations. In the early days, we focused primarily on patient experience. Mm-hmm. And we still do some of that work, but today our primary focus has really shifted to meet market needs to the employee experience. And given the challenges that most organizations are experiencing related to workforce, you know, for the last few years, when you ask executives, what's keeping you up at night? Workforce is almost always on that list. So we work with organizations to help them stabilize that workforce and then transform that work environment to one that's really a competitive advantage for them. And we do that primarily at the middle management level. I mean, mm-hmm. we work up and down the organization, but if you believe Gallup's research, and I do, study years ago said if 70% of the variance in employee engagement is explained by one thing, and that's the manager that the employee reports right. to. And today, I have unbelievable respect. I always have believed that the middle managers have the hardest jobs in the entire place. And today their job's even harder. So we help organizations think differently about how they develop, how they support those middle managers, and how those middle managers can be more successful in engaging their employees, providing a great experience for their employees, retaining their employees, and bringing down turnover. So that's the work that I'm doing today.
Okay. Well, and Burl, you're so right. You know, I remember going back 25 years ago. I was in Kearney, Nebraska, at Good Sam Hospital, and we were a beta site for, at that time, CHI, for this new thing called customer experience. We're like, okay, what is this all about? Yeah. And so you mentioned Gallup. We did a lot of work with Gallup. We did a lot of work with, and now I'm really dating myself, old Arthur Anderson Consulting. Oh, yeah. You know, we met with Quint Studer before he even left Baptist. He was still there running that. Wow. And so we came together and put this package together to try to drive customer experience. But the one thing that we found, as you said, you know, if your employee satisfaction is high, your customer satisfaction will follow.
It usually follows. That's exactly
yeah.
right.
Yeah. And as you said, the middle manager's job today is so much more difficult than it was 25 years ago. Because right. now, you know, we have so many issues with us, you know, from a reimbursement standpoint or from a workforce standpoint right. because of all the, you know, all the changes that were happening even before COVID. And so, right. you know, I try to prop up and thank my middle managers every single day because right. they're the ones on the firing line. So.
Yeah, they are. And they, you know, I think that middle management job has been getting harder for a long time. Mm-hmm. Some people will say, well, it's just the pandemic. Well, the pandemic didn't cause a lot of that, but it certainly exacerbated and accelerated a lot of the challenges that middle managers are up against today. And what we're seeing in the organizations we're working with is often, I think the middle managers are more burned out than the frontline staff who work for them. They are, and gosh, I'm so humbled. They are troopers. We talked about heroes during the pandemic, and rightfully so. We talked about the frontline staff. Those middle managers held it together for us. They every day they were figuring it out hour by hour. How are we going to get through the next 24 hours? Now the extreme level of stress and challenge of the pandemic has subsided a bit, but just keeping a unit or a department staffed when there are significant shortages. When there are increasing pressures, financial pressures, operational pressures, patient experience pressures, it is an incredibly difficult job. And so I am humbled to have the opportunity to work with middle managers every day. And it's gratifying. Probably the most gratifying part of my work today is how receptive middle managers are to our work. Because what they tell us is help. Because this is unlike anything I've ever seen. The challenges that of shortages, but also the changing attitudes about work by up and coming generations. It really changing attitudes about work among all of us. So all of that creates new and different challenges for middle managers, and we feel very fortunate to have the opportunity to be in the trenches working with them in organizations across the country.
Yeah. Well, it's obvious you've got a passion for this. What caused you to step away from the hospital CEO role and start Stamp and Chase?
Yeah. And you know, it's funny as I was coming up through the ranks and early in my career, early days, I thought all I wanted in the world was to be a hospital CEO. If I could just be a hospital CEO. And I got lucky, and I worked hard, but some things fell into place, and I got to be a CEO, reasonably young. Mm-hmm. And I loved it, and I wouldn't trade it for anything. But I decided at one point that there was an entrepreneur inside me kind of struggling to get out. And when I left Phoenix Children's Hospital and we decided to come back home to Missouri, to St. Louis, I thought, if I don't do this now, I'll probably never do it.
Right.
And I don't regret very much, but I probably would have regretted that. And so the passion to create a firm focused on experience, again, in the early days, particularly patient experience, was really driven by two things. Number one, there was a personal experience that I had in the final days of my dad's life that could have been better.
Yeah.
The major thing that could have been better was how, and these were dedicated folks, very, very smart, brilliant folks that I know wanted to do the right thing, but they didn't want to listen. Mm-hmm. And they didn't want to listen to my mom. And it really made my dad's final days much, much more difficult. Yeah. That's one. The second was, as I was watching what was happening, as you pointed out, as patients' experience began to evolve and we started talking about this, I thought there was an opportunity to support frontline staff in a little bit different way. And so what we developed is an approach that really focuses first and foremost on building interpersonal communication competencies for staff. Mm-hmm. Because if you look at CAP surveys, if you look at whether it's Press Ganey or NRC or PR, whoever, if you look at the questions, most of them trace back to communication and how the individual caregiver, whether it's a clinical caregiver or support staff, how they connect to. And so I thought there was an opportunity there. So that's what really drove the early days of the firm. And I had the good fortune of working with, really terrific organizations across the country. And we learned together. It's been, and now that focus on communication is really much more focused on how that middle manager communicates and connects with his or her team to best support them.
Very nice. Very nice. So, you know, when you're working with healthcare organizations now, you know, outside of this, you know, employee experience, what are some of the major things that are really concerning you in our industry?
That's a big question. First and foremost, not to repeat what I've already said, I really am worried about our workforce.
Yeah.
I'm really worried about the long-term, the experience that we provide and the stress and trauma. I mean, healthcare jobs can and should be among the most personally rewarding jobs anywhere. Yeah. You know, we talk a lot about purpose, but a lot of organizations talk about purpose. And I think in healthcare, sometimes we think, well, we got that purpose thing taken care of. We like saving people's lives. Next topic.
Right.
But if we don't talk about that and celebrate that and connect the work that caregivers do every day to that purpose, it kind of doesn't count. We kind of don't get credit for it. So I think it's both. So the short term, we're helping organizations reduce turnover, which is killing middle managers. Oh. Long term, I think the work that we're doing humbly plays a role, can play a role in rethinking the workplace environment in healthcare organizations that really embraces and rewards individuals. I've done a lot of work for faith-based organizations. Faith-based organizations often refer to it as the calling. We get back to some of that. So that worries me a lot. Different topic, but I do worry about, I'll be careful. I don't want to wade into sensitive territory, but I think every individual, regardless of where they are, where they came from, they have a right to receive compassionate, respectful healthcare.
I agree.
And I worry a bit about that.
You know, the other thing, and if I don't know if you agree with me on this, Burl, something that has that really concerns me that has really cropped up, frankly, I think, like you said, COVID's exacerbated, but it was happening before, was really just workforce violence, workplace violence.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Think about it. You know, whenever I started my career, I never had to think about somebody coming in and assaulting a nurse or another clinician. I didn't have to think about somebody bringing a gun into the ED. I mean, that rarely, if ever, happened.
Right. You know,
36 years ago when I started.
Right.
And now, I mean, it's almost a daily occurrence that I'm having, I'm having a nurse punched, hit, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, and this is with security present. And so it's just, and it's not just patients. I mean, it's family. It's, you know, what do you think about that? What are you seeing in that realm?
I couldn't agree with you more. It's incredibly troubling. And I think, and there's, I don't think there, if there's an easy answer, I'm not sure what it is. Because it is, you know, in some ways, my wife works at Barnes Jewish Hospital here in St. Louis and is an operations manager in the emergency department. And you know, their emergency department is really a picture every day of kind of humanity generally. It is, I mean, you get individuals who are homeless coming in, but because of the kinds of services and the reputation of BJC and Washington University School of Medicine, you may have the CEO of a major St. Louis corporation in the next bed. So you literally have, you know, the diversity in that emergency room.
Sure.
But what happens, it is, you know, it is a, in many ways, a picture of what's happening outside. And so as we see it in often, you know, violence increasing in our communities, especially the, and I do worry about you got me off on a tangent, Kevin, but kind of the way people treat one another. And I think that got worse during the pandemic. When I talk to frontline staff and to managers, they say people are just so much more angry than they used to be. And so even if the physical violence is clearly an enormous problem, but even at a level below the physical violence, the verbal abuse and that our staff have to endure is a real problem. So, you know, there's not a simple solution to that, but I do think that in the work that we do, that a small part that touches on that is we need to make sure that our staff are well equipped, well trained with the skills to de-escalate to the extent that they can.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. They also have to feel like if I feel uncomfortable and I get in, there better be a public safety officer pretty close by.
That's no kidding.
So we cannot expect them to do more than is fair, but at the same time, we need to equip them with the skills that can help kind of de-escalate some of those, to the benefit for the patient and family, but also for their own personal safety.
Yeah, you know, and you kind of touched on a point, you know, with COVID. I mean, healthcare has always been a really noble profession.
Always.
And COVID brought something into play that we haven't had to deal with before, and that was a distrust of healthcare.
Yes.
And so I think that has driven a lot of the anger.
Yeah. Agreed.
See, you know, and as you mentioned a little bit earlier when we were talking workforce, yeah, you know, the generation, I always laughed, you know, hey, I grew up in the microwave generation. You put the popcorn in and sit there, hurry up, let's go. These guys are that on steroids. And it's like I walk in, it's all about me. It's about, you know, I've got, let's just say, okay, I'm a lower acuity. I've got a UTI. I expect to be seen now. When I've got a chest pain over here, where I've got, you know, a blockage over here, I've got all this other stuff, but people are just so focused on themselves.
Yes.
That they expect immediate attention when their condition doesn't necessarily warrant that.
Right. Yeah. Right. Right. That is exactly right. The expectations people have for speed, convenience, all of that.
Yeah.
The challenges of, well, we could go down a lot of different paths, Kevin. Challenges of people don't talk to each other anymore.
No, you're exactly right.
The challenges of technology and social media. And I mean, and the challenge of, we talk a lot, we work with professionals at all levels of the organization, including physicians. We do a number of projects with physicians and we lean on Dr. Christina Maslach's work regarding burnout, the root causes of burnout. We talk a lot about the symptoms. We got to talk about the root causes as well. And one of the six root causes is voice or control. Do you have any say at all in the work that you do every day? And we talk about how frustrating, boy, when you think back to when I started my career, you know, what physicians were promised as they came out of medical school at that point doesn't look anything like what they've ended up with today. The payers have taken control away, health systems as they acquire practices have taken control away, and patients have taken control away because they come in with, here, see what I found on Google?
That's what I was going to say.
All you need to do is just prescribe this and it'll be fine. So patients, they come in with, not just convenience and speed, but these expectations about, you need to prescribe this now.
I think direct to consumer advertising has played a big role in that as well.
Agreed.
Yeah, I think everybody now, I didn't go to medical school, but I stayed at a Holiday Inn Express, and so I know exactly what I know.
Everybody stayed at a Holiday Inn Express.
It seems like it, right? Boy, no kidding. So hey, Burl, I understand that you've written a new book. Tell us about it.
Oh, thanks. Yes. Becoming a Better Boss is the title.
How can I get that? I need a copy of that real quick.
Well, you're on my list, my friend. You're
good. Gonna, that's you're, right. That's
as,
right.
As soon as we're published, you're going to get a signed copy.
I appreciate that. I'll need that one.
So a quick story. So this, I have to thank the American College of Healthcare Executives. So a few years ago, I worked hard at this, but a few years ago, I was fortunate enough to join their faculty. And so I do workshops for ACHE. And back in August of last year, in your home state of Texas, it was a virtual program, but I was doing a workshop for the Navy Medical Command in San Antonio. And we finished the workshop and, humbly, they were telling me they thought it went really well. And one of the leaders of the group said, "That was great. It's exactly what we needed. If you've written a book, I want to buy it." And I said, "You know, I haven't, but I've been thinking about writing a book for a long, long, long time." And he gave me the bump, the kick in the butt to get it done. So the book is it's really a book that in many ways is sort of my personal leadership memoir, my journey. And, you know, I worked. Can't always say I'm the smartest in the room. Can't always say, but I work pretty damn hard. I have at all stages of my career. So I worked really, really hard. And so what do they do? What do organizations do when you work really, really hard? Uh-huh. They promote you and have people report to you.
Right.
And so what I didn't know what I didn't know. I mean, I was in a good boss at all. I thought I was, but I was still too focused on my personal, what I was doing, what I was contributing, not how to help a team contribute. And so I had to learn that. And so I tell a lot of stories along the way. And then there's a good part of the book that is pretty tactical. The back third of the book really focuses on, in my firm, we've developed a framework that helps, it's all evidence-based practices, but it helps managers think a little differently about how they do their work every day. We try really hard not to pile additional stuff on their plate. They do not need that. But what they do need, and they tell us this, is I got to think differently about how I engage my team in the work we do every day, how I give them voice, how I provide feedback and recognition, how I support and nurture a sense of community and teamwork across that team, how I connect our work to purpose. I'm going through the six root causes of burnout. Yeah. So that's the book. That's what it's about. Okay. I'm a writer by training. I started a long, 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 long time ago as a writer. I was the editor of my high school newspaper, in fact.
Okay, so and this comes
this
naturally.
Has been fun for me personally to get back to my roots, so it's been really fulfilling for me personally to write the book, and hopefully I'll sell one or two.
Very good. That's I have some people say you need to write a book, and then I have to think about that and say there's too many names that would have to be changed. I don't know about that. So, and of course I've got your LinkedIn profile up because that's my cheat note.
You're good too. Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about it. Says you're the creator of Caremunication, and so I started in my career on the marketing, business development, PR, comms side. So I want to hear more about that.
So Caremunication is what is the curriculum, the program that we developed early days, primarily focused on patient experience.
Okay.
But it certainly has, so the care part of it at the front end is obvious, but it's also an acronym for, and our model for how we think about interpersonal communication in any situation from the most complex to the most routine follows kind of a natural pattern. The C is composed. We need to go in present. We need to go in focused. We need to go in not to the extent that we can, not distracted by these things or not distracted by other things. A is acknowledge. Acknowledge, that's the active listening. That's the back and forth. Mm-hmm. Acknowledge where that other person is coming from And it's fair to help them understand where you're coming from too. So it's sure. It's that have we reached a level of understanding, even if it's short of agreement? Mm-hmm. And then if we have, then the R is respond. We respond much, much more intelligently. We respond to the situations and the issues that they're most concerned about, not what we might guess they're most concerned about, because sometimes we get surprised. Sometimes it's not that at all. And then the E is evaluate. Is it working? What's are we connecting? Is it helping the patient and the family or our colleague? And is the conversation beneficial for us? So there's an entire curriculum that we built really helps. I use the tag, speaking of, I'm an old marketing guy. We really help people build talents, not just implement tactics. Mm-hmm. So we're really about trying to help frontline staff develop those communication talents and competencies that are going to help them be successful. When people ask me about our philosophy, I still quote a nurse from Tucson, Arizona that we worked with. Long story that I won't go into, but this particular situation in this hospital was they'd been through a lot, and their staff had gotten pretty skeptical. It's probably the nicest term that I could use. And one of the nurses said to the head of HR that I was working with, said, "All right, so I thought this is just another crappy thing you're going to make us go to and I'm going to have to go. But I got to admit, this is the first time I feel like you've invested in me as a person, not just an employee." Mm-hmm. So I'll take that. So we try to do that in everything we do, that we really are as concerned about investing in individuals' personal talents and success, because we think that's the best route to get to collectively organizational success. Sure. So care communication.
Very good. Very good. Okay. Last question. Why do you love this? What keeps you going every day?
I love people who work in healthcare. I am so humbled by people who work in healthcare, and I got lucky. You know, a lot of people say, "I always knew I wanted to work in healthcare. I always knew I wanted to be a marketing PR guy, and I got lucky in my first job in marketing PR was in healthcare." Mm-hmm. And I stayed. And I stayed because the link to purpose and something meaningful and really important. But more than that, I stayed because I just love people. And, mm-hmm. I think they're the most dedicated, a lot of times this doesn't get, and I think part of it's a coping mechanism, but I found healthcare people to be darn funny. Oh. The funniest people they are. That's what's made me stay.
Yeah. Well, we have a very similar start to our careers because I was in another industry for 4 years. Stumbled into healthcare, living in Little Rock, Arkansas. I don't know if you knew Russ Harrington, who ran Baptist in Little Rock.
Sure, I know the name. I didn't know him personally, but I know that name. Yeah,
he was our Sunday school teacher. He knew I wasn't happy where I was. He said, "Send me a resume. I don't know what we have." I said, "Okay." And I'd been selling electronic supplies for a big company. And so I came in and took those talents and joined their inpatient rehabilitation hospital and figured, hey, if I can sell wiring cable, I can sell, stroke rehab or whatever. And I never wanted to go into healthcare, never wanted to go to med school because I didn't like blood, pain, or needles. I mean, why do I want to be in a hospital with those three things? But literally that first day I walked in and went into the rehab gym, I'm like, man, I'm called to do this. This is what I'm supposed to do. Yeah, and right. 36 years later, I'm still doing it. Yeah. But I'm like you. I love it. And the people here, it may be a coping mechanism, but by gosh, when I do write the book, I've got some really funny material.
I know. There are stories every day. That is exactly right. I love healthcare, and it's you're right. Our beginnings are very similar. Yeah. I started in a different industry. I did leave. I strayed for a couple of years.
Okay.
I went back to get my my MBA. And since I started in marketing, I thought that, okay, if I want to be a real marketer, I need to go to consumer packaged goods. And so I worked for a couple of years at a great company here in St. Louis with Purina. Our customers were not patients. They were four-legged friends. Great company, great experience. But boy, I missed healthcare a lot more than I thought I was going to. So when I had the opportunity to come back to healthcare at St. Louis Children's Hospital and start the first marketing strategic planning department, I jumped at it. And
Can't blame you a bit. Well, Burl, if people want to connect with Stamp and Chase, how do they do that?
Well, the easiest way is through LinkedIn. I hated my weird name when I was a kid. I love it now because I can tell you there's only one Burl Stamp on LinkedIn.
There you go.
So I'm very easy to find. Please connect with me. We published probably not as often as we should, but fairly often on topics and things that we're learning in the organizations that we work with. So LinkedIn is a very straightforward way. I give my contact information to everybody. So my email is Burl, B-U-R-L at stampandchase.com, all spelled out.
That's easy.
I'll even give you my cell phone number.
Wow.
I like to talk to people. My cell phone is 314-299-9373. Just don't sell it to spammers or scammers. I only want to talk to healthcare people. So.
Absolutely. Well, Burl, it's been a pleasure. I've had a blast with you.
Thank you, Kevin. I love your podcast. I love to, and thanks for the opportunity to be a guest.
Well, thanks for being on. And so, folks, I hope you've had as much fun with Burl as I've had. Burl Stamp, founder of Stamp and Chase, been doing this for well over two decades. As he said, you know, recovering healthcare executive. So give him a call if he can be of assistance for you. And thanks for making it through yet another episode of I Don't Care with me, Dr. Kevin Stevenson. I appreciate that. I appreciate you. And we'll talk to you next time. Take care.